Today, has the Fed lost control? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, world's latest post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The New York Fed has been operating in the so-called ripper markets now for a couple of weeks and are getting ever more embroiled into providing liquidity to the stuttering markets. So today I want to go over recent events and consider the broader implications. The interventions were supposed to calm the stress in the secured lending markets and ease the funding shortfall in the interbank markets. This is what Jerome Powell said directly after the first interventions more than a week ago when they cut the cash rate last week.
It's been CNBC. I've only done this a lot of times. I wonder if you're concerned about how the Federal Reserve operated through the recent liquidity crunch in markets. We talked to many traders who said the tax date payment was known well in advance. There were several reports of people pointing to September as a potential crunch time. You closed Monday at the top end of the Fed funds rate. Tuesday came along and there wasn't an operation until 9 o'clock, and no announcement until of a second operation till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Was the Fed listening to markets well ahead of time, going back a year when there were blowouts in the overnight rate at year end and the turn of the year? Are you concerned about how, for example, the New York Fed operated through this?
You know, so I would say I doubt that anyone is closer to and has more invested in carefully following the, you know, the behavior of these markets. So, of course, we were well aware of the, you know, the tax payments and also of the settlement of the large bond purchases. And, you know, we were very much waiting for that. But we didn't expect – the response to that was stronger than we expected. And, by the way, our sense is that it surprised market participants a lot, too. I mean, people were writing about this and publishing stories about it weeks ago. It wasn't a surprise, but it was a stronger response than we expected. So I'm not concerned about that, to answer your question. I can go on a little bit about how we're looking at that. Why don't I do that? As I mentioned, we don't see this as having any implications for the broader economy or for the economic outlook, nor for our ability to control rates. The strains in the money markets reflect forces that we saw coming, and they just had a bigger effect than I think most folks anticipated. Strong demand for cash to purchase treasuries and pay corporate taxes. We took appropriate actions to address those pressures, to keep the Fed funds rate within the target range, and those measures were successful. If we experience another episode of pressures in money markets, we have the tools to address those pressures. We will not hesitate to use them. And since we're talking about this, let me take a step back and say this. Earlier in the year, as you will all recall, after careful study over a period of years, actually, the committee announced the decision to implement monetary policy in an ample reserves regime. And we've been operating in that regime for a full decade. We think it works well to implement our rate decisions. The main hallmark of that regime is that we use adjustments in our administered rates, the IOER and RRP rates, to keep the Fed fund rates in the target range. It's designed specifically so that we do not expect to be conducting frequent open market operations for that purpose. So going forward, we're going to be very closely monitoring market developments and assessing their implications for the appropriate level of reserves. And we're going to be assessing, you know, the question of when it will be appropriate to resume the organic growth of our balance sheet. And I'm sure we'll be revisiting that question during this intermeeting period and certainly at our next meeting.
Just follow up very quickly. Do you think you've underestimated the amount of reserves necessary for the banking system?
So we've always said that that the level is uncertain, right? And that's something we've tried to be very clear about. And as you know, we've invested lots of time talking to many of the large holders of reserves to assess what they say is their demand for reserve. We tried to assess what that is. We've tried to combine all that together. We put it out so the public can react to it. But yes, there's real uncertainty, and it is certainly possible that we will need to resume the organic growth of the balance sheet earlier than we thought. That's always been a possibility, and it certainly is now. Again, we'll be looking at this carefully in coming days and taking it up at the next meeting.
As early as Wednesday last week, it was obvious that the intervention had failed. The Wall Street Journal at the time said, for the first time in more than a decade, the Federal Reserve injected cash into money markets on Tuesday to pull down interest rates and said it would do so again on Wednesday after technical factors led to a sudden shortfall of cash. The pressures relate to shortages of funds banks face resulting from an increase in federal borrowing and the central bank's decision to shrink the size of its securities holdings in recent years. It reduced these holdings by not buying new ones when they matured, effectively taking money out of the financial system. And Bloomberg last week said that while the spike wasn't evidence of any sort of imminent financial crisis, it highlighted how the Fed was losing control over short-term lending, one of its key tools for implementing monetary policy. And it also indicated that Wall Street is struggling to absorb record sales of Treasury debt to fund a swelling US budget deficit. What's more, many dealers have curtailed trading because of safeguards implemented after the 2008 crisis, making these markets more prone to volatility. The Federal Reserve has made it crystal clear that it doesn't want US money market rates to spike again like they did earlier, and announced that it will, for as many days as it requires, continue to make those repo offers. The Fed, for example, offered up to $75 billion in so-called overnight repurchase agreements later in the week, adding another dose of temporary liquidity to try and restore order in the banking system. It had made those same offers on Tuesday and Wednesday and continues deploying a tool it hasn't used for more than a decade. And the latest action follows the Fed's reduction in the interest rate on excess reserves, or IOER, which was another attempt to quell money market stresses. The prior operations sort of calmed the markets for a bit, with repo rates declining last week to more normal levels, but they have, of course, had jumped previously to 10% on Tuesday of last week, which was four times above where they were the previous week. And in addition, as Credit Suisse pointed out, Basel changed the rules. The longer-term issue is that the definition of excess reserves has changed in a Basel III environment. Previously, excess reserves were defined by the Fed standard. If banks held more in the Federal Reserve accounts than they needed to settle transactions with one another, they had excess reserves. But now, under Basel III, excess reserves are defined by a global standard, and banks not only need enough reserves to settle accounts with each other at the end of each day, they also need to hold enough reserves for liquidity and capital buffer purposes too. Indeed, reserves are better high-quality liquid assets, HQLA, than even US Treasuries. And in this context, at the beginning of 2017, which was when Basel III really kicked in, banks found themselves with excess reserves by Fed standards, but deficit reserves by Basel III standards. And making things worse for a little while at least were the Fed's balance sheet reduction efforts, which drained reserves from the system. All of this could be a signal of a potential liquidity crisis that may echo 2007. As Wall Street put it, the Fed's plan A of manipulating federal funds rates into its target range, now between 1.75% and 2%, has miserably failed. So it switched to plan B to control short-term interest rates. But this plan B was plan A that the Fed had used routinely to control short-term interest rates in the era before the financial crisis. So it's back to the future. In September 2008, when the US financial system was threatening to freeze up, the Fed developed new tools on the spot, including bailout emergency loans to banks, industrial companies, and market players under a variety of programs, and it shifted to ZIRP and QE, but it stopped the repo operations because they weren't needed anymore. But now the Fed says that after October the 10th, 2019, the desk will conduct operations as necessary to help maintain the federal funds rate in the target range, the amounts and timings of which have not yet been determined. And meantime, they are at it again, continuing in the overnight markets with another $75 billion here, another $75 billion there, as well as term transactions too. What's happening, it seems, is that some financial institutions with liquidity available are not willing to trade with others in the overnight markets who have liquidity issues. And we suspect this is because trust in the financial system is again being questioned. And this is a horrible reminder of what happened in 2007 and is a warning to central banks globally. The news from the New York Fed Reserve indicates that the one-off spike in repo rates is more structural than many thought, and many pundits even tried to blame the timing of tax payments and the like. The Fed, of course, which had cut rates by 25 basis points, continued its efforts to unblock the financial system's plumbing by continuing with their repo operations. Let's just explain what repo means. The New York Fed has been conducting repo operations since last week, where in the morning they offered, let's say, up to $75 billion in cash for collateral as an interest rate that is within the Fed's target range. The allowed collateral are treasury securities, agency securities, and mortgage-backed securities guaranteed by various government-sponsored enterprises. These are overnight interest-bearing loans that unwind the next morning, with the Fed getting its $75 billion back in cash and the dealers getting back their collateral. As these operations were undertaken every day for the past few days, it's essentially the same $75 billion or whatever that gets recycled every day. So those daily amounts are not additive, and these operations therefore do not have anything to do with QE. But the term offerings that are also running in parallel now do. And now the latest tranches of both the term and overnight operations are at $60 billion and $100 billion respectively. All up, this is now close to $250 billion in funding and counting. And the target rate is still on the high side, and the offers are more oversubscribed than ever. If this continues, then the Fed's balance sheet will be growing again and fast. Remember when they were planning to shrink it? In essence, more of the US economy will be supported by a larger Fed. A larger and market-distorting Fed to boot. But the underlying question still open is, are these measures signs of a deeper malaise, signalling banks are not trusting some of their counterparties, and without constant liquidity support, will the market fall over? And in the light of events over the past week plus, do the remarks from the Fed pass muster? We think not. This is significantly more serious than they admit. And whilst I agree that the Fed can continue to borrow and therefore can continue to provide liquidity almost indefinitely, the fallout and implications of this are extremely serious. So it's important that we watch these developments over the next few weeks. And if in fact liquidity continues to be an issue, it really does signal more trouble ahead. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.